And we're discussing in general terms the idea of Shemitah, which is described at great length in Parshat Bechukosai. The general ideas that are associated with Shemitah have to do with the whole issue of human ownership. That is, that on the seventh year, the land has to lie fallow. A person can't work his own field. Essentially, as the Mefarshim point out, the idea of Shemitah is an extension of the concept of Shabbos. That's why you have the number seven in different situations. The seventh day, we desist from all kinds of labor, from all kinds of constructive endeavor. And that's to reflect the idea that all of existence is based upon the true existence, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's to break down the idea that we really own anything. We utilize the concept of ownership. That's an important concept in the framework of human society. And indeed, the halacha recognizes it and pays a great deal of attention to it. There's no question about it that halacha respects the institution of bailus, of human ownership of property, all the prohibitions against theft, and all of the discussions, the concept of ownership, at what point a person obtains ownership, at what point the person loses ownership. As, for example, the Gemara takes up the issue of lost objects and the idea of yush, when the owner gives up hope of getting it back, so that then his ownership is removed. And there's all kinds of different discussions of what constitutes this type of yush and so forth. So there's no question that ownership is a very, very important idea in terms of the human framework. But on a certain level, a person has to recognize that we don't have true ownership. It's just an illusion of ownership. And the reason for that is that what is the ultimate ownership? What is the ultimate basis of ownership? The ultimate basis of ownership is that it's yours. This is yours. You're responsible for it. You've created it. It belongs to you. In that sense, man has no ownership whatsoever. And he has no ownership even over his own life. That sounds strange. Do I own my life? Is it mine? But people act that way. That's an emotional idea. This is mine. This is my life. This is my body. I can do whatever I want with it. And a person has that feeling of permanence, that he's really a permanent part of the scheme of things. And that idea has a tremendous influence on his life. It's a completely absurd idea. And that is to say that a person's relationship to the scheme of things, or a person's relationship to existence, is very, very tenuous. You have no control over anything. We learn in Pirkei Avos, it says, Bal Karchach Ata Chai, that it's against your will. That is, you have no choice. The point is that you have no choice. You had nothing, absolutely nothing to do with your own existence. So you yourself are a product of something else. And therefore, you're a result of something else. You're not a creator. Man does have that feeling of being the creator. He acts as though he's the boss. He acts as though it's his world. He acts as though what he does in this world really matters. Like he has some kind of a control. And that's a very false type of an idea. I believe also that this is the true basis of Yiras Hashem, the fear of God. Because if a person internalizes this, that he really doesn't partake of existence. That's what it's saying. It's you have nothing to do with anything. It's with the fact that you live and with the fact that you die. It's something that's going to happen because of forces that are completely outside of any control that you have. So why do I exist? It's something which is contingent. It's contingent on the will of the Creator. People do not internalize that idea on the emotional level. They may acknowledge it on a certain abstract level, but that's the real fear of God. Let me see if I can give an example. You could have situations like that where you're completely dependent upon the activity of someone else. The person's undergoing an operation, so all sense of pride and power and control comes to an end. He realizes that everything depends upon the doctor or the staff that's working on him. And at that moment in time, it's real, and he has a certain fear or awe or respect. He realizes that he can't do anything for himself. Or if a person is being rescued and helicoptered, so he's dangling at the end of the string, and if that person were to act in a ridiculous manner, as to forget the conditions, the structure of his existence, and to imagine as though he himself is responsible for what's happening, and to completely block out the fact that there's a helicopter above him that's really responsible in carrying him, and to imagine, it would seem insane, of course, to be laughing at everybody and waving as though he's in complete control of the situation. Then everybody would think that this person is insane. A normal person at that point in time would be very humble and recognize that he owes everything to the skill and the activity of the ones who are controlling the helicopter. Now, I'm using that as an analogy because that, in my opinion, is a very serious basis of Yiras Hashem. We don't look at our lives that way, the total picture. We forget the total picture, and we become involved in something which is accidental. You block that whole thing out, and then you go out there, and you didn't create anything. Everything has been created, and everything has been given a certain order, and you've been given an intelligence which gives you the capacity to understand it to a certain extent, and you could do certain things within it, and because you do those things within it, you now begin to feel that it's yours. It's as though you brought it into existence. So it's a complete absurdity that is to say that we don't even have ownership over our own lives. And if a person realized that every moment of existence is only because God is granting you existence and your existence is completely dependent upon God, his entire outlook would be different. And I believe that's the real basis of fear of God. Now, this is an idea that has to be incorporated into every aspect of life. It's incorporated the idea of contingency, that our existence is contingent and dependent, and there's only one true existence, and that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's because of his will that we exist, and we really can't even understand that. We can't even understand why it is that he wills us to exist. That's expressed in the idea of the Shabbos, that we desist from labor and devote ourselves entirely towards trying to get closer to the Creator, to be involved with the fundamental ideas, the real purpose of our existence, because we only exist insofar as we fulfill that purpose, and we desist from any kind of physical labor. And that's why the punishment for violating the Shabbos is so severe, liable to the death penalty, and kares, the destruction of the person's soul, because it's a denial. It's a denial at the most fundamental level of the Creator. And you're maintaining that no, that man exists, that man has an independent claim to existence. And the real world is the world of man. The same is true with regard to other things. This idea is expressed when you set up a nation, and the entire nation, the purpose of this nation, is on a national level to implement the type of life which is founded upon these basic concepts. So that the seventh year, the reason for the seventh year is, again, it's Shabbos. It reflects the idea of creation. And it reflects the idea of creation with regard to the ownership that you have in the land. And it goes contrary to the whole emotion of ownership. There's a very powerful emotion that people have, which expresses itself with regard to ownership. It's tied in with the idea of human immortality. And you'll notice that ownership is not just a practical thing. Sometimes it is, but very often it's a very powerful emotional thing. When a person sees something and he's really attracted to it, it's not enough that he has access to it or can use it. He feels he's got to have it. A person buys a certain kind of a house, a mansion. It's got many, many things that he really doesn't need, but he's got to own it. And when he owns it, he feels a certain type of a security. And it gives him a sense of permanence. So the idea of ownership, again, it's a false idea. And everything associated with it is a false idea. That it's not yours in the sense that you emotionally believe it's yours. It's yours in a different sense, in a halachic kind of a sense. It's all based upon the fact that God has granted us existence and the material things that we need. And in order to have a society, you have to have a system whereby property is distributed and people have rights to it. So the ownership that we have is really a halachic mechanism by which we are the ones who have rights to it, to use it. But that emotional sense that it belongs to us is false. And therefore, the idea that the entire land of Israel is a gift that's given to us by God, and it's to be utilized for a certain purpose, is expressed in Shemitah. That this is absolutely contrary to the emotion of ownership. Because when a person has the emotion of ownership, he's completely wrapped up in it. A businessman is completely wrapped up in his business. Like an artist, for example. An artist can't be diverted. They wake up in the morning, and they go back to the painting, and they have to add something, they have to change something. And the same is true with a businessman. The idea that I can't even touch it, that I can't, that's on Shabbos, for example, too. It's the same idea. But the idea that for an entire year, I cannot be involved in working on my property, that completely negates the whole idea of ownership. Because he becomes worried and anxious. I have to fix it. I have to make the improvement. I have to do the other thing. All these different types of things. Now, the truth of the matter is that you really don't have to do that much. That it exists because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the main cause. And whatever you do or don't do is kind of minimal. And by refraining from working on the seventh year, so then you're really affirming the true idea. That everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem Ha'aretzim Eloah, that the entire world belongs to God, and that God has granted us the right to use these different things, but it's for a certain type of a purpose. That all of the material things that God has granted us are not ends in themselves to magnify the ego, which is completely false, and this is totally absurd. But it's to serve God. And that is why the other aspect of the parsha over here has to do with the ani. It's a very significant theme that the land has to lie fallow and those who are poor can come and take. And that is a very significant idea as well. The tremendous emphasis that the Torah places upon helping the ani, that too is a very important aspect of perfection, that the ani is the one who doesn't have property. And we tend to look down on him because he doesn't have property. And we associate importance and significance and success with the accumulation of physical objects, with ownership. And it's because of that we look down on the ani, on the poor person, because he doesn't have these things. But the truth of the matter is that there's no basis for that differentiation. We should not have any sense of differentiation. in terms of looking at this person in a diminished way, that this is not fully, that this person is not on the same level as we are on. That's why people give out of a sense of sympathy. But that sympathy is based upon the fact that this person is really not on the same level. Now, of course, we should have sympathy because the person may be suffering. But the reality that a person's true importance and significance has absolutely nothing to do with the accumulation of property and wealth, but it has to do with their spiritual perfection, with the perfection of the soul, that's a very significant idea. And that the ani, the poor person, can very often be on a much higher level. Chazal say that tizaru baniyim, that you should be very careful with the treatment of the aniyim, because me'aniya Yisrael yotzei sora, that Torah comes from which segment of the populace. It doesn't, which class, from the middle class, the upper class, the lower class, tends to come to a large extent from the aniyim, from the poor. And a major reason for that is because when a person is in a situation where they're deprived from all of the physical fantasies, so very often that itself creates an impetus to become involved in Torah. That's the only area that's left. So that may not be the highest level of motivation, but that situation is one which lends itself. It's more in line with the true reality. That's the acquisition. The acquisition is the acquisition of Torah. This idea has practical significance, especially to our generation, and to young people, or middle-aged people, especially to young people who have to face a tremendous pressure in this society. And even it exists within religious circles, where they maintain that it's important to be observant of the Torah, it's important to learn, and so on and so forth. However, whether spoken or unspoken, there is a sense of pressure that the really important thing is to, quote-unquote, succeed in life. And when they say succeed in life, they mean it not necessarily in accordance with what the Torah would consider success, but they mean it in terms of what our society would consider success, which has to do, now, to a certain extent, that approach may be in line with the Torah approach. That is to say, we certainly maintain that a person has to be practical, that a person has to operate within the laws of nature, and therefore it's very important that a person should have a foundation, that a person should have a parnasa, a means of livelihood, a means of making a living, and should not be careless about his life and just leave things to chance. No question about that. But that's not the same idea that the society is imposing, that the pressure is coming from. They may say that, they'll use that idea, but what they have in mind is something which is a fantasy and which provides a certain type of a satisfaction to an egotistic striving, and that is the word success. It's not measured, their success is not necessarily measured in a practical situation where a person is living modestly and has enough to satisfy their needs and their family, but it allows them an opportunity at the same time to continue learning. With that very same person, if that person were driven to so-called success, would want to go on and on and on. And now this is what they would call it, fulfilling your potential to maximize. Why are you content to have a small practice in some town when you have such talent? You could be the head of a hospital and you could get fame and you could be making so much more money if you would devote yourself more exclusively to your profession. That is pretty much what the emotion impels people to. And then you could have such a nicer home and your whole lifestyle. Why you don't have to live on this type of a lifestyle. True, you're not starving, you're getting by. But you can have beautiful cars and a beautiful house with a swimming pool. Then you're getting into something else. You're getting into a certain fantasy whereby one's whole sense of worth and importance is measured by a certain standard of success, which of course is very much connected to the particular time and place. This existed 100 years ago, it existed 500 years ago. the objects which would be indicators of this kind of success, the physical objects, obviously change, and they depend upon what's available in every generation. So, what would have been considered a success, the type of house or car or other things, television, 50 years ago, of course, changes today, because now the society becomes much wealthier and there's more things out there. So it's not enough to have those things, you have to have the latest things. But that's what people are chasing. They're chasing a certain type of an emotion of approval, a psychological sense of approval, parental approval in the unconscious, which is based upon the fact that they've accumulated, they've made it, they're successful. That idea is something which everybody has to confront, because that is not what the Torah considers to be success. And the objective of human existence, of course, I have no problem using the word success, but it depends what you mean by success. It has to be success in terms of the reality of human existence as detailed for us, as defined for us by the Creator. So that if a person were to live a life which would make him feel successful, but that success is based upon human emotion and the emotion of the society, and it's contrary to the will of God, then I would have to label it as a failure. So these are the ideas that are contained in the whole parsha of Bahar, and the institution of Shemitah goes to the heart of the most powerful element in this fantasy of human success, which is ownership, accumulation, and importance. Based upon that, it breaks that down and tells you that you really don't have any true ownership at all. And you don't even have existence. You don't even partake of existence. Existence is something which is, so to speak, leased to you. And you're totally contingent, totally dependent upon the will of God for your very existence. And certainly when it comes to your property, it is something which God has given to you, given rights. You have rights to utilize it. And thus, by withholding and refraining, you're demonstrating that this is not the type of ownership that is in line with that fantasy that most people have.